podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Welcome back to Gentleman Stories Podcast with me, John.
I'm Owen.
I'm Sam.
And today we have got Master of Ceremonies, Dave Basson. How's it going?
You all right, boys?
All good, mate. What's going on?
Looking a little bit fresher than
some people.
I think it's we've gone half four this morning.
Did you?
I was working, mate.
You was out in the old trollop last night, so that's why you look like 10,000 barrels of shit.
Yeah, because it's not about me, though, is it?
Before Dave come in, we're trying to be all professional and you're being sick in the toilet.
Unedited.
Anyway, Dave, how's it going?
Yeah, good, mate. Yeah, you know.
Good to have you on, man.
We're going to talk about probably a bit of your unlicensed stuff because we've all done a lot of unlicensed stuff together. And then basically get your career at the moment as a master of ceremonies and how you got into it, how's it going, and everything like that.
But I'd like to also add in there,
go on,
David Basson Ring Hire as well.
Ring
Hire Limited.
Plug. That's the biggest plug if I've ever seen.
Obviously, very reasonable, competitive with MC packages available.
He's definitely got a voice for radio.
I've got a face for radio.
Later on as well, we'll restate that message as well as you come back. So I'll strip it right back then. When did you start with putting gloves on?
I don't know. I really always had a bit of an obsession with boxing anyway. A bit of a total enthusiast, really. Used to muck about as a kid, like most of us did, really. And then I've always been one who gets involved with things and then obsesses a little bit. And then before I kind of... So I had a lot of problems with my legs as well as a teenager. I don't know why I'm even saying.
That's all right. No. It's your story, mate.
So a lot of it changed for me. I couldn't do a lot of the sports that I wanted to do or was told I couldn't anyway by consultants. They said I wouldn't be walking by the time I got to 20 and stuff like that. So, and they couldn't do any more operations than they had done. And they said, it's all right, you'll be driving by then, so it won't really matter so much. So, because I kind of wanted to go to the army as well, and I was told I wouldn't be able to do that at 15. So it was, and then kind of went through my 20s, like you do. I could still walk. It was fine. This isn't a mad sob story, by the way. And then I kind of started obsessing over sort of weight training, got involved with sort of bodybuilding and stuff like that.
Seen some of the photos.
Yeah, I turned into a bit of a unit there. And then I was going to a lot of these white collar shows or unlicensed shows. And I was watching some of these boys on there. I remember my cousin Jimmy saying to me, oh, these lads are earning such and such. I went, lay off. And then obviously Hyder, who you had on a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
Hyder. I've known Hyder for quite a few years. We used to
work. What a character.
I've known Hyder for about 20 years now. And I got talking to him. He said, well, get down the gym, blah, blah, blah. So that was how I came back to the gym. I was in my 30s by now. I'd had enough of lifting weights and getting as big as I could. Thought I'd go in there and just be able to blaze through it. That wasn't the case. Obviously, you boys were all in the gym there. We'll train.
Oh, so that was the first time in a boxing gym?
No, I'd been in boxing gyms before, but that was the first really to fight.
Yeah.
Did you not do any, would you just in and out, did you do any like amateur stuff? No. So you literally joined us when we were all there, like Joe and everything like that.
Yeah, and just came in just because... Listen, I just love fighting and having a tear open. It makes you feel alive, mate. And that was the thing. Once I got in there, obviously a couple of months later, sold some tickets, had a fight, had another fight.
How many did you and you had?
Fights? I don't know, 40 odd.
Fucking hell, really?
40
yeah,
odd?
Yeah, sure.
Fucking hell, yeah.
So can you remember your first one?
Yeah, but the first one was down the casino rooms, and the second one was
lad from Portsmouth, wasn't it?
No, there was one before that, two weeks before it. Matty Bowler had put on that.
We all fought on that.
Yeah,
charity event, and it was like, he was just like, we needed some boys.
That was your first one?
Yeah, and I stopped that boy, didn't I? And then it was that lad from Portsmouth. Oh, that was terrible.
Well,
I stopped him, but he shouldn't have been in there.
He would throw a punch. I remember he'd throw a punch and turn away.
He's still about now. Getting stiffened, mate. But then after that, and the thing was as well, kind of had that one, and then things weren't going so right for me personally, really. And then I'd said, listen, I want some proper fights. I didn't want these boys. Yeah, I didn't want to be selling tickets and just having these.
But Joe licked his lips with that when you said that, wasn't it?
We didn't. He said, just keep selling tickets. Keep
really?
Selling tickets. Yeah.
Oh, we got the fucking opposite.
And then, obviously, but straight away, I was up on the shows with you boys.
More long shows.
Yeah.
I wouldn't change that.
I loved it, mate. And then the first one was a boy that you'd boxed.
Mark Collins.
I can't remember.
He's like over 6 foot odd.
Yeah.
About 3 stone heavier.
I remember going in there and looking at him walking. I was thinking, oh, Christ. Well, he caught me with the first shot, and I didn't really, I don't know, it just felt like he hit me on the top of the head of a brick, to be honest. But then the ref started counting his stand again. I thought, wow, what's going on here?
What, Gary?
Yeah. No, it wasn't.
Mark Potter, rest in peace.
Yeah, like, if it weren't Mark, it'd be Gary. If it weren't Gary, it'd be Mark, wouldn't it?
And that was Mark. And then, anyway, carried on. And then he managed to drop me. And I went down. And sat through my, like I say, things weren't going great for me at the time. And
Hyde was in the corner, right?
Yeah, and Hyde, I was shouting. I was going, you said you wanted this. And I remember just thinking, right, that's that. He ain't putting me over again.
Yeah. I remember you screaming at him.
And then I went to the corner at the end, and Mark come over and he said, you need to show us something here. I was on pulling you out. I said, yeah, it's all right. And then that was it. Yeah, just started beating my chest.
I was there for that.
I got booed out and cheered back in. You know, the crowd was chanting, they're coming up to it going, oh, mate, that was mad watching that. So it was, and that was the start of that. But then I remember Alan coming up to me at the end, and he just whispered in my ear and went, loads of work for you, mate. And that was it. Just every single week, twice a night, 3 times a week.
Times a week, and they were a good payday.
Did you fight just Essex?
Pretty much, but it wasn't just Alan's shows. I did go on. There was one night I fought a fella called Mikey Bourne.
That chappy that knocked out Jamie Spate?
Name wasn't Spate. You're on about.
No, not Spate. Jamie Spencer. You boxed him?
Yeah.
You were fucking mad, bro.
And the thing was, right.
He was eyeing everyone
out. And at the time, they was messaging down on the week of the fight, I couldn't get anyone, and he'd had something like 33 stoppages or something stupid.
Some wild record.
They were saying, you know, he weighed 90 kilos. They needed somebody who was going to stay in there with him. And Joe was going to, they're offering you. I said, that's all right. Yeah, just take it. And he was like, he's going, but he said, they're saying, he said, what are you weighing? I said, well, I don't know. What do I have to weigh? They were saying, well, he's got to come in minimum 80. Otherwise, we can't let it happen. So I was like, right. And we literally went up there. I was sat in the Jenny Wren in Sittingbourne, and they did like a steak deal thing, like a big 16-ounce steak. And I thought, right. Sat there in the afternoon eating this steak. I was drinking litres of water going up there.
3 pairs of socks on.
And this was a big, it was in the summer. It was June, July, it was steaming. I wore tracksuit bottoms with jeans over the top. And then I wore a t-shirt, jumper and a jacket, and I filled my pockets up. We purposely turned up late.
Oh, so
as I'm running, they said, on the scales, come on. I went, yeah, yeah, all right, all right. And I just took my trainers off and stood on the scale. And they went, and it just tipped about 80 kilos. I was like, oh, and they went, all right, all right. So I said, all right, all right, yeah, yeah, yeah. And then the show started, see. So they went on, yeah, they didn't have a chance to sort of. And we stripped down and I got the scales out just before I was going to go on. And I was just about 74 kilos.
Fucking hell, man. Dangerous.
Yeah, I wouldn't advocate it to him, but at the time, it was just a period of life where I wanted to... I went in there and they was literally saying that, like, the ref, you could tell, was looking to stop me anything he could. And he caught me with a decent enough body shot, and I took a knee, and I was looking at him, and Joe said, stay there, stay there. I was like, oh, what is it? And I got up, and I carried on. And then the next flurry, it was in the second round, the next flurry, the ref
Did you do any, like, we done, like, the Plymouth stuff and that? I know you was a bit after. Did you do anything up and down the country, or was it just...
Oddly enough, I met that promoter because I went and did a bit of work for him down there.
With Bear or
Luke Larry or Bear?
His name was Bear.
Luke Larry looked like
Superman.
Yeah, looked like he's like a Calvin Klein advert. You know the difference between both of them.
Which one it was? It was in that nightclub, wasn't it?
Oceana.
Yeah,
probably.
Oceana.
It's like a big industrial estate.
It's got like Nando's and a TK Maxx and that.
Yeah, I turned up there that night. This was years ago now. They wanted an auction. He said to me, yeah, do really well. He didn't pay it. Like, in my envelope, he hadn't paid the full fee. I had to chase him about. Oh, sorry.
Oh, really?
And then he was going, yeah, the auction fly. I didn't sell a thing. Mate. He didn't sell a thing. Fuck you.
He's got no money.
No, literally, it was only the third time. It was the first time at that point.
Oh, really?
God, so that was a few years ago. Yeah, not a single thing. Yeah.
So you carried on with the unlicensed stuff, just doing the away shows. Did you do any more home shows, ticket selling, or was you just happy to...
You sold tickets on the road.
I sold some up. I took 50-odd up to Essex one
day. Yeah, we was on the same card. Yeah, I remember that. That's when I bought that Darren Coville.
Yeah, I took that night. Yeah, 55 I took up there.
It was for an RBA bill, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't win. The fella was 6'4", mate.
We are sitting down at the moment.
I'm not. He was huge. I can't remember his name either. Steve Sangrubber, I think. But he was a nice enough lad.
Steve Hughes?
Nah.
Wait a minute.
Cotton or something or other. I can't remember now. I can't remember after that.
Yeah, I did 34 fights. That's it.
Who did?
Yeah, 34 fights.
Is that all?
Yeah,
that's fucking
34 fights.
Yeah.
So with the unlicensed, could you name a few that really stick out?
I suppose the last official one I had before I went on to the MCing was a fella called Chris McCabe. And he was probably, or they get caught up in it, or I say it was probably the best one, but you get caught up in it.
Yeah.
I can't remember. Sort of mixture, really. Literally, people come up to us, oh, do you remember? I haven't got a clue. And they say, we had a great fight. I go, yeah.
You won.
Yeah, I can't remember that.
What about
Chris McCabe? Okay. See, that was the second fight of the night. I'd already fought. And someone
you got double whammy?
Yeah.
Oh, you lucky bastard.
Someone didn't turn up. They came into the room, you know. How are you feeling? I said, yeah, I'm feeling all right. Do you want to go again? Yeah, double bubble. Yeah, cool. I still got, oh, don't worry about it, you'll be all right. It's only his first fight, don't worry. No, they didn't say that, it just went, just do what you do, you know, cover up. And I said, what's his name? Well, Chris McCabe. I said, all right, yeah. So I was asking around the changing room. And Marty was up there, I think, and he said, I said, Chris McCabe. And he went, Chris McCabe. And I went, yeah. And they went, just cover up and that. Really? I was thinking, really? I was thinking, are they joking though? Yeah, like, are they trying to wire me up? Like, getting under the skin of that? And I was like, oh, well, don't worry about it. You know, I'll go out there and have a go. Well, I went out there and Gary was reffing. He'd ref me 20 minutes before that. And all I did was change my shorts. So obviously no one recognised me. And,
shaved the beard.
You know, totally different name. Got named and that as I went out there. And I got out there and Gary was like, what are you doing out here? You've already bought a blah, blah, blah. And I was like, wow, well, it's a
bit of a... Oh, I love Gary, isn't he? He wants you to be laughing away, wasn't he?
He said, well, Robert, who you got? And then suddenly Billy announces, Chris McCabe. And he went, right. He said, if I see you get in trouble at all, I'm stopping you, Dave. I'm stopping you. Just please, hold your hands up at least.
I was like, the fucking what is going on?
Well, anyway, we went
out. T1 turn, mate.
Go out, you know, and obviously.
Comes out, looks like a calcium kid.
Well, he looked absolutely, you know, like a great god. Shape.
Yeah,
Adonis.
Yeah, absolutely. And by that time, I wasn't as lean or as built as I once, was a year or two before that. And I was just like, oh. I looked at him and thought, oh, it'd be all right. You know, we've seen it all before.
Yeah.
And I came out and he sent out a jab, mate. And it was probably the sharpest shot and the fastest shot. Because that was the thing. I always had a high guard.
Yeah.
And even if I was blocking it with my face, at least I could see it coming. So it was but it was kind of, you were prepared. But he was just like, and I was like, whoa. And then he hit me with a 1-2. And I thought, oh, Christ, I'm in a proper fight here. And he had the fastest hands and he moved me about. I went the distance with him and it was all right. And, you know, and I even caught him with a couple of decent shots myself and I was quite happy with that. And Gary came up to me and said, oh, that was amazing. Well done. Like, I'm really proud of you for getting through that one. I was thinking, oh, well, it was good, but, you know, what is it? Why does everyone know this kid? So he was respectful, said, see you later. Obviously, we didn't get paid for overtime, so I just wanted to get out of the chat and shoot on.
Get back.
And the next day, he messaged me and said, oh, thanks so much for getting in there with me and blah, 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 and saving my night. And obviously, he'd sold a lot of tickets. He said, oh, what have you done? I said, no, not nothing really. You know, I just do these sort of unlicensed fights. I've had quite a few now, but that's probably it for me or coming to to the end of it. And he was like, I said, so what have you done? And
British
he said, he said, I had 105 amateurs. I was in the GB development squad and I won. And he had something like 87. He boxed for England and all that. Lot. And before that, he boxed on the Queensbury League. He said, well, I was on there undefeated, won their titles. So I've moved over to the IBA. He said, how am I doing? I just went, you'll do great.
I'm up a moment.
I think he had problems. He was going to turn pro. He had problems with the medical and that. And that was why he was
doing the unlicensed stuff.
The unlicensed stuff. Yeah.
In the unlicensed scene, what was the best venue you had boxed at?
I don't know. Like we did.
New York Hall, you fought New York Hall?
Yeah, three times.
You done West Ham as well?
Yeah.
You didn't fight West Ham.
I did twice.
Did you
fight West Ham? Twice, yeah. We've got pictures of us there. Outside,
he had too much.
No, he's had too much. Fuck, he's still hanging, isn't he?
Said twice, just before it shut as well.
Yeah, because I was more tempted to nick a West Ham chair.
Do you know what? Actually, out the West Ham chairs,
go on.
Available in the signed boxing memorabilia. Well, it's not boxing; it's football. Ridiculous. We've actually got the chairs from the Berlin signed.
How much is it for?
Do you want one? They're quite a lot. They've got about 17 signatures on them.
It'd be a good birthday present for someone, I know.
But they are about 900 quid.
Mage rates, what's that, 899?
Yeah.
899. Plus that.
They're pricey bit of memorabilia.
Yeah, no, that's good.
But yeah, so yeah, I boxed it.
When did Martin wrap your hands?
Oh, the night that they got shattered. Look at that. Look, my knuckles never ever come back.
His knuckles are an indent.
Just totally. And the thing was, I felt it go in the first round. That was against James Banks. And I remember that was a good fight because that was a proper tear up. It was just literally
Just wish you didn't have Martin fucking Illman wrap your hands.
I said, no, I felt good, man. It felt good. I was like, oh. And that was mad as well, right? Because literally 10 days before that, I got a call. Can you fight on whatever date it was? I said, yeah. What weight are you? I said, well, what weight do you need? Well, he said, this boy usually fights at like 68. He said, so really it needs to be at 74 he wants it. I said, all right. So I said, when I got on the scales, I was 81. Kilos. Oh. I had about 12 days notice or something stupid. So I went, yeah, I'll be fine. I can do 74. Well, I'll tell you what, I went on the maddest diet. I was out running and that because it was quite a nice fight. I thought he's not that much taller than me.
Yeah.
And I thought this will be a nice come to have a go and all this. So I said, yeah, all right. So I trained, got myself down to 74 kilos. The day I walked in, I felt sick because I'd cut all sugar out of my diet. Literally went onto a total protein diet. And I didn't do it a very good way, but it was obviously crashing this weight off me. And got on the scales, I made the weight. And then I never saw him until about 45 minutes before the show starts. I said, oh, man, he's fucking huge.
Massive. What, he 174?
I said, no, man, damn it. I never saw him touch the scales. And then, in fact, there's like a picture. I'm going to try and find it, I'm sure, on my Instagram. And you can see both the body shapes. That literally, like, he did used to fight, but he was really fit down at like 68 or something. And then by the time, you know, he'd gone up and up and up. Because let's face it, you know, I'm 5'4". I should probably be down at about, well, probably 54 or something. But, I haven't been below 10 stone since I was 15 years old. So it's...
You're fighting similar people to me. And I'm, like, not much taller.
Yeah, so it's, do you know what I mean? It's quite, mind you, George is the same. He's always fighting taller boys. George, by the way, is my son, everyone out there. Fantastic young man, George Basson. keep your ears open in a few years. Who's also sponsored by Protect and Patrol. I'd just like to make
that. He's outdated. We need to do some more. To give him anything.
No, well, he hasn't used the kit that you bought him last year because he broke his hand, didn't he? Which was really bad. So he hasn't boxed for a year, but he's had the kit made. We're just hoping it still fits him.
I just remember, obviously, as you're going around the scene, sparring and stuff like that, just granite chin, just fucking granite chin.
That was the thing. What I had less of in talent, just stood there and took it. Yeah. I always remember sparring you, Sam. I'd stand there and he'd get so frustrated because I'd just drop my hands in the end. And I'd just literally protect me. Go, come on. He'd just be smashing me. And I couldn't get anywhere near him.
Yeah, I was going to say, we had some good spars as well.
I used to love it, Dan. Turning up.
Billy Beck.
It was a great time, I think, for our little group.
It was like the stars aligned.
Everyone just
come down bosh. I actually remember it was quite decent fondness and the stuff that we'd done, casinos and over at Circus Tavern and stuff like that. I fucking loved it. It was a great part, I think, of like a time that was when it was there.
No one was above their own.
No.
Yeah. We all knew we were just fucking there to make money. That was it.
Well, but the thing was, I think everyone did help everyone as well. No one looked down on anyone.
Yeah, no one was above their own level.
No.
We all stood up for each other.
Yeah, exactly.
One of us was fighting up the Circus Tavern and the three other bug sets were fighting there, there'd be ring touching.
Yeah, right? Just trying to get it on whilst everyone's booing you, do you know what I mean? So how did it come to you from unlicensed to basically getting a mic in your hand?
That was all to do with, as we was coming to the end, sort of with the fighting, Joe was obviously starting to put on pro shows, and he put one on with Steffi Ball, and then the second one where he was going to do it on his own, he said to me, get involved with me, see about the organising and such like.
Because you were doing the, like, say, logistics side of it. Like,
yeah, that's it. Yeah, because he's more of the... it was just more sort of sorting out ticket money with fighters, making sure that everyone on the night handed in their money, got paid and stuff like that.
Yeah,
looking after guests when they were coming in, you know what I mean, the tables and stuff like that. It was making sure that there was long stories about saying the bar staff and that. I'm not going to go into that, but we was doing a few... We've done a few shows, and I just turned around and said, these MCs, Joe. Like, and he was going, well, if you think you can do better, you fucking do it. And I went,
All right.
And he said, well, if you do it, I'll pay for your board license and all that. And I said, no, it's all right, I'll do that. And that's how it started. So I went and got my license the week after.
Had to get a catchphrase.
Well, not really. Catchphrases, I'll tell you a story about that in a minute, actually, as well, because obviously it's a slightly different catchphrase now to what I started off with.
Right.
But, I went up, got the board license, did a show the week after, got a message from somebody who was on the panel the day I got my board license, who sent me a number and said I'd fit the bill. They were looking for an MC as well, and then did a few Goodwin shows.
What did you have to do at the board? Did you have to, like, just speak on a mic? Like,
no, you have to go up there. They kind of throw questions at you about the rules of boxing.
Right.
The rules around what the purpose of an MC is, what information an MC must know, why it's important for an MC to give the right information, about crowd control. All sorts of different questions. And then they asked me to do, announce in front of them, which was the weirdest experience ever. It was in this real plush hotel in London, in a boardroom.
They
all sit opposite you like apprentice, don't they?
That's the thing, you would have been up
there.
When you was going for a license. It's exactly the same on the same days.
Yeah, so weird.
And then I had to kind of audition, and it was obviously a lot of what I do at shows. You get feedback from the crowd.
Yeah, yeah.
There wasn't just much feedback, like but yeah, they just
there's, there's no feedback.
Yeah, you know, it's just as I'm stood there going, ladies and gentlemen, just looking at you. Going, oh, Yankees,
oh,
right.
Oh, great, my mate.
So it was, got the license, got straight away busy. That was the thing. Joe had a show for me in Worksop the week after. Then, like I said, this contact with Kevin Campion and Steve Goodwin.
So, what was your catchphrase? What was your catchphrase when you first started?
Well, when I first started, it was check your watches. It's fight time.
Yeah.
And then I'd sent out a promo and that, and then another MC who I don't think he MCs anymore, actually messaged me and told me that I was breaking copyright.
Really?
Sending me links with him, I believe.
Oh.
With over It's Fight Time.
Who's the... Oh. Who was the MC?
Oh, I don't need to go into that.
Oh, it's the... For the views, mate.
Yeah, it doesn't really matter anyways, is it?
So what is it now?
Well, oh, it's check your watches. Now is the time. So let's get these fights on!
Come on, man. Tingling down my spine, like, say my name.
But to be honest, I barely ever use it anymore unless there is a title fight.
Yeah.
Obviously, because you can do the whole spiel, you know, like your diamond or buffer or anything, you know, you're announcing the judges, you're announcing everything.
Yeah.
Fighters are ready, blah, blah, blah. Are you ready? Then check your, you know. So
how is it being an MC with, like, because you're an MC through, you do pro shows. Do you do other shows as well?
I do amateur.
Yeah.
I do amateur. Yeah, I do the pro and the amateur shows.
Okay.
You do weddings.
Do weddings?
Oh, I've done weddings.
Done Hyder's wedding.
Done Hyder's wedding. So what's it like on the pro shows? Is it different, like you turn up and is it different shows?
Well, it's just about preparation, really. Obviously, pro shows. Obviously, look, we boxed around a lot of unlicensed and stuff like that. You can be a lot more free in what you say, but you could basically say whatever you want, can't you?
Yeah. When you're feeding the MC information about fighters and they're getting their name wrong because you're stitching them up.
I'm a boxer.
Yeah, oh, I forgot about
the
that.
MC, it's the dude with the dreads, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Grant was fighting Joe Hughes.
Yeah. And he just got his thing completely wrong.
He had 12 wins.
Well, no. He said, look, he'd had 10 losses and 1 win.
So, but just completely fucked up Grant's record. Yeah. Like 3 times.
Everything went wrong. I was like, me and him were looking at each other like, fuck it.
Who was it? Not me, but I'm not sure. Yeah, one with the dreads.
No, it wasn't David Dunmore. Right. It was Lance Murdoch.
Oh, was it? Oh, I thought it was
Dave knows all of them now.
I know Lance. I do talk to Lance. But he's kind of an unlicensed
MC. Didn't he win that competition?
And then he got a license. He was actually approached by Boxer or whoever it was at the time before they, because obviously they grew off the back of that.
Yeah,
you know,
I'm
a boxer, and then now Bench along
is Matchroom, Sky, not Matchroom, Sky.
Well,
sorry,
with Sky. I believe they approached him and supported him to go and get his boxing license. They could do that. Mm-hmm. And that was his first show as a pro on a pro show.
Mm-hmm. How many shows you think you've done?
I think that in itself shows. The difference, this is the point I'm getting at.
Yeah.
With the information, it's not just about it's about saying the appropriate information.
Yeah.
And the right information as well as ramping up the crowd. It's not just about ramping up the crowd and saying whatever you want. Right?
Yeah.
So I think with that, it's...
If... I've always thought in my head, like, say if, like, I'm fighting, blah, blah, my record decent, and you as MCing, would you go, like, you're my opponent. Yeah, Sam Stone. 10 wins. 9 knockouts. Would you ever do that if you favoured someone? I would love to see that. Do you know what I mean?
I don't ever like do it as a favourite. Like, literally, the away fighter gets the same amount with me as anyone else. But I'll always say about knockouts, obviously, but I won't make them up.
Like, no, just like engine size.
Never knock no one out.
Yeah, I always do. Yeah. I always do. It could be, ladies and gentlemen, here we go with a professional record of 10 fights, 10 wins, 9 big wins by way of knockout. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, from Chatham, Kent, it is Iron Man Sam Stone. Yeah, well.
Maybe moister than an oyster, Dave.
When you jumped in like the first time, was you nervous? Was you like, what the fuck am I doing here?
To be fair, I can't even remember that first night, but it must have gone all right.
You're doing pretty well off the back of it.
Yeah.
What the thing was, because I kind of get quite ramped up and excited in what I'm doing. You know what it's like when you get, you know, I mean, a bit excited and that you kind of at the end, like, wow, that went well, but you can't remember it all.
Yeah.
And I've obviously got my own style. I don't sort of copy anyone as such, and your style develops as well at the time. And
you improve.
Yeah, of course. You have to constantly learn. You need to learn. And if you don't constantly learn, then you're ignorant, really, I believe, anyway. You need to.
Yeah, set in your ways kind of thing.
And, I did that. And I was really nervous. And then I was buzzing at the end of the night. Oh, this is amazing.
Little payday.
Yeah, fantastic. And then, obviously, off the back of that, I did a work show the next week and then the next week, and then it was Christmas, and then we went into the new year, and it started off again really well. And the nerves get less and less, and you do become more confident, and you learn and learn and learn. But off the back of that first show, there was actually someone from the boxing board there, and he said to me, oh, that was really good. It's nice to see fresh fresh MCs, blah, blah, blah. I went, right, enough, and all this, like, and I was like, all right, well, here's my number, you know. Any, and I was always saying to her, if there's anything you feel I can improve on or anything I need to do, and blah, blah, blah. And he took my number. I didn't think anything else of it. And then just after Christmas, I actually got a phone call randomly out of the blue off of a guy. I didn't have a clue who he was. His name was Phil Jones. Now Phil, I know really well. He's a good guy. He's actually a whip and does several other roles within boxing. And he's really well known up and down the country. He's booked out every single weekend, flat out. Busy on the big shows, small shows, all sorts of shows. But he messaged me and said, look, your number's been passed to me from the Midlands area. And I've got a show down in Bournemouth. And I was like, all right. I said, who? And he told me he had passed some number. I said, all right. And it was from that first show. And he introduced me to a promoter called Steve Bendel down in Bournemouth. Now, Phil's from right up north, but it was Steve's first show that he was putting on. And they was obviously looking for an MC. Got me involved. And then since then, I've worked for Steve now for the last however many years.
Wow,
and that's how it just kind of always took off. Word of mouth. I've never really advertised. I put a bit on Facebook, but I don't advertise everything I do. One thing led to another, really.
So what's the, like, where's there, if you turn up at a show and you think, fucking hell, this is going to all kick off here and there?
You can get a little bit tense, but listen, the one thing I think is, no news, things get kick off because people get idle in the crowd. They get drunk.
Yeah.
They get bored and they're about waiting. So it's a good thing to, one, keep your boxing flowing. They're there to watch fights. Keep it flowing. If for one reason or another you can't keep it flowing or there's a big delay at the start of the event, we've had that before. There was a problem with an ambulance once at one of the Kenny shows. So you have to ad-lib, you know, and we was having an auction that night, so I pulled the auction to the beginning of the show. You know, the auction virtually died on its ass, but at least it killed a bit of time and kept the crowds from getting itchy and everything. And then it's about talking constantly to the crowd, giving information. If you give people some information, even if it's not the news they want to hear, at least it's some news.
Yeah.
Well, about like show, best show that you've been to, and you think this is plush, like
what?
You turn MC up and it's like, it's smooth, looks great.
Has to be the MTK shows.
I did
some MTK ones because the production that they put on was
a high level.
I did them. I did some MTK ones about 4 years ago.
Yeah,
Brentwood Centre,
wasn't it? Yeah, it'd be Brentwood, wasn't it?
I did them. Oh, well, I did one from at York Hall as well, and I did one at Gray's, but the Brentwood one was
unreal.
The lighting rig and the actual show itself with IFL and everything. So,
what's next for you then?
Well, obviously, over the last 12 months, because the thing is, obviously, my background work-wise, I've worked for the NHS in mental health services for 25 years. And actually, I quit my job, full-time job, back in November. But for a long time, I'd been obviously the MC, and I'd like to have been able to take that full-time. And just before the pandemic, I was getting really busy. And the thought then was, right, let's go down to part-time on my other job and do this, because I was going out to Sweden.
I used to Bahrain a couple of times. You did the tournaments,
and the MMA stuff as well.
And then I'd been out to Romania, Italy, and it was really starting to...
Who was that band you done? Was it a band?
Oh, Arcade Fire. That was one of the most random things. And that was a mad thing as well. I was at work, actually. Got a phone call on a Wednesday afternoon from this producer to do with this band. And they just said, oh, are you a boxing announcer? And I went, yeah. And to be honest, I was a bit nervous. I was thinking, who's this random known number?
Yeah.
They said, are you available tonight? And I went, right, well, I suppose it depends where, what for, you know, just because I'm an announcer, I'm not going to do anything kinky, like. And they said, well, she said, it's a bit of an odd announcement, but she said, obviously I'm still with this band and they want to come in, they're doing a launch of their new album. And they want to come in and be introduced like boxers. Now, we had a guy up here last night who did it, and he wasn't really, he didn't fit the bill very well, basically. And would you be available? And I was like, yeah, if you like, yeah. And she went, oh, how much would you charge? And I said a fee. And she went, oh, right. Should I check that? She said, but I'm pretty sure that'll be okay. Is that including expenses? Because I do advise you put that on. I was thinking,
how much
is it? Yeah, I was thinking, but what is this? Like, because she's actually basically saying that's not enough.
Yeah, yeah.
So I went, yeah, yeah, I'll put on petrol money and expenses. She went, yes, please make sure you do. So she said, anyway, could you come up to it? It's only in York Hall. It's a small personal gig for this band called Arcade Fire, who I hadn't really heard of before. So I was like, yeah, that's fine. I said, is there any chance I could bring my lads with me? Because George was only about nine or ten or something at the time. And she said, that'd be good. Honestly, bring him. He'll have a great time. He can have a free concert. Obviously, it's totally sold out, blah, blah, blah. I said, yeah, that's fine. So I did that. And then I started Googling them. And I was looking on their video clips and that, like, you know, 10 million views and stuff. I was like, oh, Christ, that's quite a big deal here. And then I Googled a bit more. They recorded with Bowie and all this lot. And done headlines, Glastonbury. And then I said, Christ. So then I
should have put fucking up more zeros.
So then I said, anyway, I said to George, do you want to go? And he was so excited. Went, oh, what a proper concert. I said, yeah, come on, we'll go up there. So we got up there anyway. And then we was in there. And I was there. We met the band. And they had chefs there and that, because it was like, and they were preparing food. I said, do you want some food? I said, oh, I'm good. But George sat down and they made him all food and everything. It was amazing, really. And then they was like, oh, well, if you're here, we'll have to give you some merchandise to George. And I gave him some T-shirts and stuff. And then they said to me an idea of what they wanted me to say, so gave it to me. And it was Will Butler, actually, one of the guitarists, who sent it to me. I've still got his number on the phone now. I've never been brave enough to message him because I don't want him to come across like, what, you messed around, boy, you're not. So anyway, he messaged me what they wanted to say. I said, oh, yeah, should we change this, blah, blah, blah. And then I was stood there. They're really tall. Like, you guys are tall, but these, they're really tall. Like, I was stood there, like, Christ. And then there was this woman there, right? She was the tallest woman I've ever seen in my life, and she was as tall as them. And she was stood there, and she looked about 6'6", because she had these massive heels on as well. Right? And I was like, maybe more, because these heels were like that, like probably like,
Stripping.
And I was like, she kind of looks familiar, but I didn't realise who it was or anything. I was like, one of like the crew, and everyone just going, oh, you have a good time, blah, blah, blah. They were going, oh, yeah, blah, blah. Do you watch Game of Thrones? And I went, no. And it was Gwendolyn Christie, the woman. Yeah. And she was there, see. They were getting her involved for this show as well, see. And I was like, I said, I don't even watch it. I said, but I kind of recognise her.
Yeah.
And she was just the tallest, tallest human beings I've ever seen in my life. But with these shoes on, she was just huge. Because she's 6'2" anyway, and she's barefoot. With these heels, she was well over
9'10".
Yeah. So that Gwendolyn Christie was always like, oh, Christ, yeah, this is exciting, blah, blah, blah. And then they was all out the back and there was all these people and the band were there. And they said, oh, do you want to have a practice, like, just for us out in the car park? So I went, yeah, all right. So I stood on the stairs and I did this announcement. The whole place, they were going, oh, this is exactly what we want. We love it. Yes, yes, yes. And then we went out there and then we did it. And then there was Jude Law there. Woody Harrelson was there. And then they said to George, do you want to get involved as well? You could walk out onto the stage and carry the bell. Well, no, Gwendolyn Christie did the like a round card and it had the emblem of the album on it.
Yeah, yeah.
Which at the time it was Everything Now, was it?
Oh, I don't even know, man.
What do you mean you don't know? I'm telling you this story. It's just meant to be wowing everyone.
I'm not into that. I wasn't when you told me the first time.
Well, we did. Anyway, so she walked out with like this round card portraying like a Ringo. And then George walked out with a bell, like a timekeeper's bell.
Yeah.
I did the massive announcement. And then she said, everything now. And then rung the bell. See, so we've done this whole thing. The place goes wild. The band are there, suddenly crack on with their song, their main song from the album. And they did all that. We watched a bit of the concert and then we had to go. And the woman who initially contacted me, her name was Lucy, she said, look, the band love you. I think we're going to be in contact to do some other bits. And obviously we go back to America now and we're going to do the world tour and they'll do the stadiums and the arenas and that. But we'll be in contact for when we come back and do the UK part. Because they did...
I'm happy to go with you.
Well, they did well. But they did, like, in... When they came back here, they did Wembley Arena, Manchester, and all that lot on part of the world tour. And then, so that was that. I didn't think anything more of it. Me and George driving, I just looked at each other in the car and was like, wow.
Oh, surreal.
That was mad. And I went, I know. It's a Wednesday.
I got a call and this morning.
Suddenly we've been in this room with all these mad celebrities. You know, because they gave us a set list. They sent us, signed all of that. And then the actual release day of the album, in the UK, through the post, I got this vinyl with a CD as well and a note written in there, thanks so much for everything you've done. Oh, hope you and George are getting well. Here's a copy of the album on vinyl. So that was nice. And then again, didn't think anything else of it. And then a couple of months later again, I suddenly got a message saying, can you call me? So I called them and they said, look, we want to release something through Apple Music later today, but we want to use your image. Are you happy for that? So I was like, well, yeah, mate, yeah. And then they went, we just need to talk about the money because obviously, and you need to sign a thing to release it. And I was like, oh, right. And obviously I was green. I was like, I was just happy that they were going to use it.
Bit of exposure.
And I
went, oh, yeah,
of course. And I said, look, what should I be charging for this? And she said, well, usually this would be the fee for a one-off. And we just want to tell you, we will not be using it for anything else. It can only be used for this one thing for Apple Music to announce this one concert that they were doing for this charitable cause thing. And it's going to be a 30-second clip, blah, blah, blah. I'm sending it to you now. Please don't show anyone. Because obviously it's not being released until 6 o'clock today.
Bosh on my socials.
Check it out. Check that you're happy with it. And then if you are, could you please sign this contract and send it back? So obviously I looked at it, yeah, that's mad. Yeah, sent it back. And obviously they paid me straight away, literally within about 24 hours. They were good payers, like literally on the button.
Yeah.
And that's great. And obviously we had this clip and it was all through Apple and it was advertising this concert that they did. So that was that. And I thought, oh, wow, this is amazing. That was fantastic. And then... again, didn't think anything else of it. And then one day I got another message and they said, and this was the one that I thought was going to be, they want to take me on the fucking world tour, mate. I've made it. How am I going to do this with George? You reckon I could blag him some sort of schooling whilst on the tour?
Yeah.
And anyway, so they messaged me and she said, look, we're going to start the world tour soon. We're starting in Canada. And actually the band, obviously joking, and she said, obviously would love to take you around with them. But that's not feasible. Mm. But we do want you to announce us into the stadiums and that. So could you do us a recording? I said, well, yeah, of course. And she went, the only thing is we do need it fairly imminently because we've only got about 3 days. And then they'll obviously edit it themselves over here, blah, blah, blah. I said, all right. And she said, ideally, I'd get you into a studio, but blah, blah. Do you know anyone who's got any recording equipment? And I actually contacted Jamie Lepinier of Shadowbox Media.
Shadowbox Media.
Obviously, they used to film
all the
I used to work with Jamie and got him involved after Dre and everything because Dre was there before. So I got Jamie involved with the show. So I go, Jamie, of course, I said, look, mate, could you come and record this? Like, they're saying it hasn't got to be the best quality, but I knew that he had a camera with a microphone on it so he could just at least record it. So we recorded it and we couldn't block out the pump from the fish tank in the background. So that was kind of buzzing through it. But they were fine with that. We sent it off, literally. We'd been there for about 10 minutes. That was it. And I was like, feel as though we've been a bit of a fraud here, Jamie. And he was like, well, what else are we meant to do? I recorded what they wanted about 10 times, sent it off. They went, oh, this is amazing. Thank you so much. Blah, blah, blah. We'll be in contact. Right, we want to buy the rights for it. This is what we would usually pay just to buy out the rights and then we can use it for whatever. And I said, okay, that's fine. It was quite a bit of money. And I said, yeah, that's fine. Gave Jamie a bit of a drink out of it as well.
Yeah.
And then she sent me a clip, which again is on my Instagram, David Basson. There's a clip from Madison Square Garden.
No way.
Where they were walking in and they're announced by me as the undefeated heavyweight champions of the world, Arcade Fire! Yeah, they came out like boxers. So,
Your voice has gone around America.
Yeah, well, and that was the thing. It was in Las Vegas. It was in Canada and stuff like that. Yeah, across the...
Well, we world tour, yeah. Across the world.
Well, I think it was probably only on the English-speaking type things.
Yeah, like America, some Europe and stuff like that.
If you saw the videos of their sets and that, half of the tour they set up as a boxing ring. The stage actually had ropes around it. So it was like a giant boxing ring. Because... there's about 10 of them or something, you know. Okay, but there's loads in the back.
Yeah. Fucking hell. Yeah, that's fucking, yeah.
You weren't going to mention that, was I?
No, I forgot all about it.
Anything else you want to add?
Nice. Thanks for having us on, boys.
This is our point of it, isn't it? So what we try and do with all the guests, basically, step by step, basically build your perfect fighter by different attributes. So if I was to ask you, who in your eyes has got the best footwork? Past, present, doesn't matter. So we'll go footwork.
Oh, what, boxing-wise?
Yeah, boxing-wise.
I think you'd have to look like something like Sugar Ray Leonard's.
Yeah.
Recently, I'd say somebody like Golovkin or something like that. Really,
what about?
He's nice, subtle foot. You know,
really
underestimated the way he moves. Everyone thinks they mastered how to beat him, but actually,
yeah.
What about boxing IQ?
I suppose modern boxers, you'd have to look at somebody like Usyk, wouldn't you? But from back in the day, boxing IQ. I don't know really. That's a pretty. I think we're going to go with Usyk.
Usyk, yeah. What about chin?
Chin. To stand there and take it, or and be able to get up.
Dave Basson.
I think. So you'd have to look at Ali, wouldn't you? Really, as well. Like I know. Look, these are sort of. Anyone would say, but look, what he did against Foreman and the likes.
Yeah.
He got dropped, but always got back up. We're not about Tyson Fury now getting up from Wilder.
But that was
one fight. Ali got up.
Fraser.
Loads of times. Put him over and stuff like that.
Defensive work,
Ali again, I guess. Yeah. But no, you'd have to say Mayweather, really, as the best defensive boxer. Mm, and probably one of the greatest IQs, really. He knew how to win, didn't he, at all costs.
Attacking prowess, so like that forward pressure.
I think you look towards the 80s now, really, I reckon. Tommy Hearns, Roberto Duran, sort of out of the Four Kings.
And punch power.
Punch power. See, obviously we all look at Mike Tyson and things like that, but I think his wasn't just punch power, it was about the pressure he put on, wasn't it, at the time and the speed. George Foreman. But obviously, if you're looking pound for pound, you've got to look at Inyo at the moment, haven't you?
Yeah. It's a good shout.
Punching through everyone. It's ridiculous as well. You don't get that many knockouts in sort of flyweights, bantamweights.
Mm. No, it's a great shout. Yeah, cheers for coming, Dave. Pleasure to have you on. Obviously, cheers, boys. Come and support us on Patreon, £3 a month. Also, follow us on socials, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, Gentleman Stories. Cheers.
Sports Social Podcast Network.